Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
The celebration is on. It's still theirs until someone rips it out of their hands.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast. 1 week up, 1 week down, alongside Chris Rosenthal. I'm your host for Inside Lacrosse, Kevin Brown. And Rosie, we got four different victors coming out of UAlbany. Week one of PLL action. We are so back. And boy, do we have a special interview for you guys. The one and only JV that you've been hearing about all week. It's Joshua Valcarcel. Josh, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to talk with you guys, and yeah, it's been a crazy week, but having a lot of fun.
So I kid a little bit there. The JV I allude to is, of course, the big news, Jared Bernhardt signing not with your California Redwoods, but with the Denver Outlaws late Monday night. A crazy saga that we'll get into later in the show, but Josh, you, I think, represent just the absolute youth movement going on in this new look California offense, the new look Redwoods coming up victorious against the Denver Outlaws in Albany for week one. Josh, just tell us a little bit about your week here from a special training camp designation, picking up through the waivers, coming to camp on a kind of a late invite. Coach Anthony Kelly shared with us post game. Give us the timeline and give us kind of the roller coaster that you're going through to crack the lineup and become the first Marist Red Fox to score in a PLL game.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been definitely a journey. I got the call from my head coach, Coach Scarcello, Marist, and it was last Monday night, so week of the camp. We all had to report Friday. So Monday night I get the call. Funny enough, Friday, I actually had to walk. That was my graduation. So I was graduating for my MBA program. And he's like, "Hey, I know, thank you." But he's like, "Hey, I know you're supposed to graduate Friday, but if you can get on this training camp roster, like, would you head to Albany?" And obviously it's a no brainer. So I'm like, I mean, coach, I'd miss anything to go. So that's kind of, you know, it was a surreal moment, just because, you know, the draft happened, and then, you know, these undrafted guys are getting signed. So after, you know, like the free agency signees and the undrafted signees, and no word from my end, I kind of thought the career was over. So, you know, just spending time, at Marist, you know, senior week's going on. So having a good time with the fellas, hanging out with the teammates for the last time. So yeah, I thought it was completely over, and, you know, so I was getting ready for the next stage of my life. And then I got that call Monday night. It was literally like, I hadn't got goosebumps, cause, you know, it's been a dream of mine for a very long time. And, you know, being from a mid-major school like Marist, it's hard to kind of get on the radar, especially when you got guys in the league who are, you know, Touraton finalists, Touraton winners, and, you know, national championship contenders. So I was really, really blessed to get that call and have that opportunity. And then I went from having to, you know, getting to hang out with the fellas to, you know, the next 3 days of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, trying to knock the rust off and get back on the lacrosse field to prepare for Friday. So then got there Friday. Was an unbelievable experience. It was very quick too. They're very on top of everything, very organized. So you know, it was nice to get into it. And then Saturday, Sunday, we had the 2 days. So that was kind of when I got my first taste of, you know, the PLL action and the practice. I got to meet the guys on the team, and you know, the practices went well. I started to turn some heads with my dodging ability, which was my goal. And was able to was able to turn enough heads after the scrimmages as well to make that 25 man roster, which was the first stepping stone. And then thankfully coaches and
Tuesday night. Yeah, the cuts for Tuesday night before game week. Yeah, continue.
Yeah, so Tuesday night got the news, super excited. Had an emotional moment with my family, my parents, my siblings. It was just a super, super emotional phone call. Obviously happy, tears were flowing. So got that news. And then the next step obviously was trying to crack into that 19 man. And was fortunate enough to do that. Got the nod on Thursday, and then, you know, was ready to play Friday. But my biggest thing, I wasn't as nervous in terms of the playing aspect, because I knew what I was capable of. I was trying to come in, you know, with a high level of confidence, obviously staying humble, but needed to maintain confidence, just because it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. And if I'm being negative, or if there's any negative self-talk, and like, I don't want to look back and be like, maybe if I, you know, had a little more confidence, I could have made the team. So I wasn't too nervous about the playing aspect. My worry was honestly the social aspect. You know, I didn't have a name for myself really going into a league where there's so many names and so much exposure to guys on social media, watching, you know, all these crazy clips of guys competing at the highest level. So I wasn't sure how I was going to fit in that aspect. But let me tell you, the California Redwoods as a whole, from the AT, Brandon, to Miko, the liaison, to, you know, GM, Joe Spallina, and Coach Kelly, Coach Collins, Coach Bocklet, and the entire team, they were so welcoming right off the bat. It was honestly something I did not expect, but I'm so fortunate to have been placed on this team, because they have been nothing short but supportive and welcoming. So I'm very, very excited that I made this team. And I can't wait to see what we do week two and the weeks following.
When you show up, who are some of the guys, you know, you just kind of mentioned Selena and, you know, some of the guys, the higher ups, who are some of the players who kind of, you know, reach out to you when you get there, kind of walk you through what the training camp experience is going to be like?
Yeah. So right before training camp, actually, Ryder Garnsey sent me a text, just a little welcome, you know, hey, my name's Ryder. Welcome to the Redwoods. And if you need anything prior to camp, just feel free to let me know. So right off the bat, I mean, that's a great sign. Great text to have before going into camp, especially when the nerves are going like crazy. But then when I got there, one of the first guys I spoke to was Cole Kirst, and you want to talk about a locker room guy? He's the definition. He is so upbeat, so positive, always getting his touches in, you know, whether it's a slap on the ass, a high five, all the good stuff. So he's such a genuine guy, such a nice guy. And then it just trickled down to getting closer with all the guys. I got pretty close with Brendan Nickturn, and he was kind of able to show me the ropes a little bit. And, you know, they all just instilled confidence in me, and all of them, the more I got to talk to, you know, the guys on the team, you know, their message kind of was all the same, in the sense of like, you made it here, you belong here. So just show the coaches, show the league what you're capable of. And that's what I did, and hopefully continue to do.
Yeah, Josh, you record team highs in goals. You got 30 and yeah, 21 as a senior. You come back for a fifth year. You finish with 127 points across 68 games at Marist. Just to parlay that into this one, hats off, credit to you for not going overboard with the boys when you thought your career might have been over. Staying game ready, And then I think it really just symbolizes the, like, everything is new with this Redwoods roster this season. New coaching staff, like you mentioned. Chris Kavanaugh was asked about you and your performance post-game, and he said it, like, you guys are going through the same thing together, right? You're both rookies on this new look squad. Just from the aspect of I love that confidence that you played with and that you talked about there, just from going through the same shared experience together to, you know, having this kind of special training camp designee label on you. Was there a kind of a level of freedom that you were able to play with too?
Yeah. Especially, like I mentioned, thinking the career was kind of over. To me, like, getting this call and getting the invite to training camp, that in itself was just such a pleasure to have. So my mindset also going into it was, you know, all of this and everything I'm about to experience within this training camp is all a bonus, because I genuinely thought I'd never been in this position I am, or that I was and that I am currently in. So yeah, like you said, there was a sense of freedom just because I was taking it one step at a time, one day at a time. And it was, you know, God has a plan type of moment, and whatever happens, happens. And thankfully I made the right plays at the right time. So there definitely was a sense of freedom.
Now, you mentioned earlier about the, you know, the PLL kind of being a dream for you, kind of a ultimate goal. The guys that you're working with, your head coach, Anthony Kelly, GM, Joe Stellina, they're, you know, old school pro lacrosse guys for a long time, but they were both back in the MLL days. Were you familiar with their resumes and, you know, kind of what they had previously brought to the table?
Yes. Yeah, I was. We had a few team meetings as well, and Coach Kelly did a really good job of relating, you know, his past experiences to the training camp as a whole and to his career. So the guys on the team got to get a little bit of an inside look on his personal experience. Same with Coach Bachlin, Coach Collins. So they did a really good job implementing that and kind of just, you know, in a subtle way, but effective way, giving us their background. And it just made, obviously, myself and the guys on the team appreciate them that much more. And, you know, with the ebbs and flows that they went through and you know, taking advantage of certain opportunities that they did within their careers. Yeah, they implemented it in a good way. And I definitely learned a lot more about them than my prior knowledge.
And I'm sure getting that text from Ryder, like, growing up, you watch his high school highlight tape, the infamous Ryder Garnsey highlights.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to, especially, you know, when there's that much hype around it. But yeah, Ryder, I've been watching him. I was actually a late bloomer to lacrosse, so started in sixth grade. But, you know, ever since then, ever since I kind of got a taste of it, I fell in love with it. So, you know, I mean, YouTube's very accessible. So you're just looking up lacrosse players, lacrosse player highlights. And Ryder's was definitely one that I fell upon and watched more than a few times.
Oh, wow. Sixth grade is definitely late. So, you know, there's obviously been, like, high schoolers as well. But tell me a little bit about that lacrosse origin story. What got you into the sport?
Yeah. So I come from a very big baseball family, which is pretty ironic. But come from a very big baseball family. My brother played, my dad played. So, you know, always baseball. And you have that, like, especially when you're young, that, like, rivalry between baseball guys and lacrosse guys. And my friends, like, my best friends, picked up lacrosse around, like, a few years prior to that sixth grade year. And, you know, they're playing and I'm still a baseball guy. And they're kind of egging me on to, you know, give it a shot. And obviously I'm, like, I'm, you know, messing around with them, like chirping them a little bit, like lacrosse, like no way, all the, you know, all the nonsense. And then sixth grade, I finally gave it a shot, and then the rest was history. I just fell in love with it. It was different than any other sport I played, and it just had that competitive aspect that I've always been looking for in a sport. And yeah, so then made the decision to play lacrosse rather than baseball in high school, and then just continued to work on my game, and was fortunate enough to get recruited by Coach Scarcell at Marist, and then everything kind of built up from there.
How did the family handle the news that you were turning your back on family business of baseball and switching over to lacrosse?
That's a great question. My family is very supporting. So, my parents were the type where, you know, they raised my siblings and I to, in the sense of, you know, no peer pressure, no pressure to, you know, do something you don't want to. If you want to try something, we're in full support of it. So they were all on board. And then, you know, when I started playing, my dad fell in love with it as well. So then he's a big lax guy now too. So it all worked out in the end.
So you mentioned you get recruited, Coach Scarcello, who kind of gets promoted your final year at Marist. Just tell me a little bit about your Marist days, and we heard on the broadcast with Anish Roth giving the reason why you wear number 34 right now for the Redwoods in your final seasons there at Marist. Just give the listeners a little bit of background behind the meaning of that number as well.
Yeah, definitely. So getting recruited by Marist and Coach Garcelle, Coach Wilkinson, you know, they did a great job, you know, explaining what the program's about, really. You know, the history behind it, the foundation that's been laid. And one of it was the story of Eddie Coombs. And, you know, during the recruiting process, I learned about the story and you know, the meaning behind the number, which is, you know, number 34 represents Eddie Taylor Coombs, who passed away tragically in a car accident. And the number is given to a senior that best emulates, you know, him and what he was about both on and off the field. He was a great locker room guy, great teammate. And he was a freak athlete. He was a D-middie for the squad. And you could find his highlights on YouTube, but he just had a motor that never ended. He was a great D-middie, and he just always had that fifth gear to him. And it looked like he never got tired. And you know, that's so whoever best resembles him and what he's about on and off the field gets the pleasure to wear that. And I was fortunate enough to be given it my senior year. The coaching staff and Mr. Coombs and the Coombs family have a say in who receives it. I'm very, very fortunate that they chose me senior year, and then with my fifth year coming back, I was allowed to keep the legacy going and wear it again.
Just tremendous stuff, Josh, and you wear it here for California. You get your first point. Nice little throwback action to the Chris Cav to be playing alongside just a guy, you know, coming off a season ago as the most outstanding player in the 24 NCAA tournament. He slides a little bit in the draft. He's a little hungry coming in this game, right? The number 10 overall pick. He balls out with 5 points. Andrew McAdory kind of has a little very similar jitterbug style to his game as you bring to the table, right? And for you guys to build this lead, you come circling around the net. You're coming against, you know, Maryland defensive coordinator. Now he's the Denver Outlaws close defenseman trying to go over the head. You evade him. You score the goal. First Marist Red Fox to score a PLL goal. Just what did that moment mean to you? And just describe the kind of instant feeling, as well as just kind of chatting it up with friends and family the few days since.
Yeah, it meant everything. It honestly felt like a fever dream. That whole day was just because of how much it was a quick turnaround from, you know, that prior Monday to, you know, thinking it was over, to then getting the nod for camp, to then making the 25, to then the 19. It happened in such a short time span. So, you know, I was riding a wave for sure. And going into that game Friday, knew what was at stake, knew what was on the line, and knew how the program finished last year. So really wanted to help, you know, build the team back up and do it with the guys to the left and right of me. So that was the goal. That was the goal, to do whatever it takes for the team to get a W and start trending in the right direction. So I was pretty locked in for the game, and when I was able to put one in the back of the net, it just, you know, you flash back to all the hard work that you put into the game, not even within the training camp, but as a kid, you know, you train your backyard, and you know, imagine scenarios and game-like scenarios of those types of moments. So, it was really a full circle moment, and to be able to wear number 34 as well and do that, it's, I know it means a lot to me, and you know, it allows me to, you know, get a platform and spread the story of Eddie Coombs even more. And that's what it's all about. That's the end goal, is, you know, I'm not playing for just myself. I'm playing for a lot more. So
one of the top selling rookie jerseys so far after week one, Josh. Just it is cool just to, you know, see your Bell Carcel across the back. But again, that backstory of Eddie Coombs is just so fantastic. Now, kind of the inverse question of what I just asked, that, you know, you score your first goal, but this is a question Rosie asks every rookie we have on the podcast here.
Yeah. Did you have a moment during that game where you kind of looked across at an opponent and you were just kind of like, you know, oh my gosh, it's this guy, you know, or I've seen this guy on TV so many times, you know, what am I can't believe I'm going against him now. Did you kind of have any of those moments during your game yet?
honestly, or training camp, honestly.
Yeah, I'd say there were definitely a handful of those moments. I wouldn't say during the game, just because of where my headspace was. I was just, you know, trying to stay locked in. But definitely during training camp, you know, like even just subtle things like walking around to the locker rooms or walking to the dining hall, and you walk by a table and you look to the left and right. It's like I've seen your highlight tape. I've seen your highlight tape. You know, so it's definitely a cool moment. I'd say I've had those types of moments the most though with the guys that I've been playing with, you know, like just being able to hang out with guys like Chris Fake and Tevlin and Garnsey and Cav and McAdory, literally the whole team, being able to you know, hang out with them outside of lacrosse and kind of get a behind the scenes look of, you know, like they're just guys trying to hang out, play a sport they love. You know, we're playing board games in the dorm rooms, like they just love to have a good time and love to be with their teammates and be with people they care about. So it's awesome to see those big names kind of have like the same moral values and same goals as me. So it's really cool.
Was there a player, just anybody in the league, maybe you've seen him at training camp, maybe you haven't even run across him yet. Is there any active player who you think your game, you kind of tried, you know, when you were growing up, maybe to copy some of their moves or kind of incorporate their stuff into your own play?
Yeah. Michael Sowers was definitely a big one. You know, I've been watching him since he was at Princeton. And yeah, I've definitely tried to emulate his game a lot. I started as an ex attackman, so, you know, his game really translated with mine. So he was definitely someone that I tried emulating to the best of my ability. And even my my fellow rookie McAdory, watching his clips, just trying to learn off of some of the really awesome plays he's made throughout college, in high school. In the past, I've definitely kept up with him as well. Just any of those guys that kind of have that jitterbug and that quick first step. Jordan Wolf's another name, big name that I watched quite a bit. Ross Scott, even Sergio Salcedo a bit. So those are a handful of guys that I've definitely seen their clips and tried to emulate one or two.
I was trying to do the quick math of, so sixth grade, you know, four years back, another three. Was that around like 2014, 2015 that you're first starting to play? And
mm-hmm.
Fast forward a couple of years, your line mate or one of your offensive teammates now is Dylan Malloy, is having like one of the best seasons ever at Brown and in 2016. Just, it is pretty surreal when you kind of put things together like that. Just, you know, he's like a sheer opposite kind of style too, just
yeah.
ramming into everyone. It was great to see him back to his old form. Just moving forward, Josh, what are you hoping to kind of show lacrosse fans, and kind of what's your kind of journey able to kind of provide an example of for aspiring fans that want to make it just like you have?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've actually been reflecting on it all, and that's something that I'm trying to wrap my head around as well. Is, you know, I think everyone has their own story, and I think it's very unique to, you know, that person. In terms of mine, I think it's a rare case and a rare scenario in terms of, you know, kind of where I started and coming from that mid-major school like Marist, which the program was amazing and did nothing but great things for me. So I'm very proud to come from Marist. Just want to put that out there. But just being
yeah,
able
to, two or three MAC champs with yeah. your time there, right?
Yeah, I only got one. I missed the other by a year. Unfortunately, but able to get one, which is nice. Get some hardware, but yeah, just, you know, for the younger people who, you know, maybe they weren't recruited heavily, or maybe, you know, they're going the D2, D3 route or low Division I route. You know, just them understanding that there truly is a chance, and that lacrosse is lacrosse, whether Division I, Division II, Division III. MCLA ball, lacrosse is lacrosse, and there's high level of play in each of those divisions in each of those leagues. So just understanding the fact of, you know, if you're willing to commit to the goal and do whatever it takes to reach that goal, then you can find success in the sport beyond, you know, high school, beyond college. And it's just possible. That's really the end goal. If you have the right mindset and if you do the right things, then, you know, success is inevitable. And yeah, that's kind of the big message.
Love it. Well, it's a good note to end on, Josh. We really appreciate you jumping on, and best luck the rest of the way. We can't wait to continue following your journey here.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you so much, Josh, for joining the show. Josh Ballcarcel, the Marist Red Fox legend and red hot selling rookie jersey wearer. What a story, Rosie. Just like I told him, just I think it really symbolized the new look movement for this new look Redwoods club. And they open the season up with a resounding W against the Denver Outlaws on opening night to put a cap to a fun Friday night. We saw we're going to quickly run through the week one results, and we'll try to go a little more look ahead here to week two, but Rosie, we'll get to the news everyone is waiting to hear our takes on with Jared Bernhardt signing with the Outlaws in a minute. But just any lasting thoughts on the Woods opening up the season on top?
Yeah, I mean, so many new pieces, all looking really good, just working together incredibly well. You know, you had a couple different styles. It wasn't all super quick guys. It wasn't all, you know, muscle wrecking ball kind of guys. It was a little bit of everything. One thing stood out to me, other than, you know, performance by our guest and by Chris Cavanaugh that you mentioned there, Andrew McAdory, so quick all the time. As soon as he catches the ball, he's gone. You know, his first goal was 1-1. He picks it up 32 seconds on the shot clock for the restart. It's in the back of the goal, 28 seconds on the shot clock. That was just his style every time he got the ball. It's going to be exhausting for people to cover him.
So much urgency. He showed why he was the number two pick in the 2025 PLL draft. Just a prototypical player that you want in this new look pro environment with the shortened shot clock. When you have a dominant faceoff guy like T.E. Erlen, you want guys around him who can create some early offense, and that is something McAdory can do. Just wait until we see Sam English back into the fold once his visa is cleared. And it's kind of a cool subplot that emerged from, you know, they went on the field. And these are the two teams that end up vying for the services of a former 2021 Tourton winner. Kudos, hats off to Dan Arescia. Great reporting all throughout this saga. Just the last two teams, you know, having the choice of the Redwoods have all this cap space with a lot of rookie contracts. Chris Gray, Rob Pinnell, Owen Grant off the books this offseason really opens things up for Bernhardt to get a spicy offer. And it was a significant pay cut, I guess you can say, that he took to sign with something no one else had. Maybe the Whips, but you have his older brother, Jesse, and some of his best buds, his college roommate, Logan Wisnowskis, who he tore it up with en route to the title game appearance in 2021, and Logan McNaney, Nick Grill. You got Luke Weirman on that squad, who was a freshman on that team. Just a pretty unreal collection of, hey, you should probably start drafting some Maryland guys to see you can get a prize free agent down the road. And that's exactly what Outlaws coach Tim Sudan did. So that is definitely the story of the week that emerged from, you know, just a great opening weekend in Albany. A little soured that the rainy, cold conditions created this kind of waterlogged field that, you know, it wasn't maybe the best product. And it kind of sets up more subplots down the road for some of these teams to keep figuring things out offensively. And for me, it adds another, you know, it's kind of an excuse of offenses always start slower than defenses to start this season. Just that's how it is building chemistry wise when you only have a week together and you're kind of tinkering with lineups. Really, every team besides a few, Atlas, Archers, Cannons, really had the most stable units going into the week one, right? And man, just the Outlaws. You ever heard of Brennan O'Neill post game? Like, they're still figuring out what it looks like with three Tourton winners. Now you add a fourth, and it's not going to look perfect right away. And I caught up with head coach Tim Sudan, and I asked him, hey, you feel any more pressure with signing in another Tourton winner
right.
to this offense, and he put it right. Like, there's certainly going to be more scrutiny for this squad, but Rosie, I'll hand it off to you now. Just, there's going to be more scrutiny, but they're ready for it. These are guys that have been under the microscope their whole prolific college careers, and now that they're all playing together, it's sounding pretty unselfish with the approach, with how these Outlaws are going about it. You're signing another alpha dog who is only going to make things easier for the backside Dodger, and whoever that is got to make the right decision, because everyone seems to be okay with getting their touches in, and it's not going to be, you know, a seamless fit at first with Bernhardt shaking off 4 years of rust. But Rosie, what'd you make of the saga as a whole and how it played out? And now this kind of juggernaut of a Denver offense moving forward.
So I'll answer it backwards. It's talking about the offense playing forward. Like you mentioned, whole bunch of alphas there, but what they do kind of have going for them is they're all very unselfish in the way that they're handling this situation and any situations they've kind of encountered previously with the Outlaws. You know, we've heard Logan Wisnowskis talk about, hey, you know, if you need me to run out the box, I'll run out the box. It's not a big deal, right? Because the question at first was, well, when he's healthy, what are you going to do with two lefties over there, right? And then bring in Pat Cavanaugh over is the same situation. Okay, well, who's going to go where? Cavanaugh is going to stay on the field and play attack. But we've seen Brendan O'Neill in different spots. We've seen Tim Sudan's willingness to try moving him around a little bit. And when you have all of those pieces who are all kind of willing to do whatever it takes, then it's got to be a lot easier for Sudan to kind of mold that clay and however he can best get it molded. But like he said, there's a lot of pressure and great question there. Is it going to increase? Absolutely. They started the season off with the kind of the stats about Tim Sudan's got all these wins, but no rings so far. Can he get it done? And that was like league stuff, right? Like that wasn't us, you know, going around asking if he can do it. That was, you know, the graphics they wanted to put out, you know, here's him on this list, but the difference is he doesn't have a ring yet. And Ryan Tarasenko, before the games started, said how important it was for this team to get them over this finish line. You know, they kind of have all these young guys offensively, but the defense skews a bit older, right? Their defensive core probably has this year left. And then there's going to be some moves, probably maybe some guys hanging it up and maybe some guys who they need to move on from. And so they really know the clock's ticking on this. So I think that's part of it, right? The urgency, they really can't afford the offensive guys to be like, this is running through me, I'm running this show. You know, they kind of have to make this thing work. It's not going to be just kind of everybody doing exactly what they want. As far as the Bernhardt saga goes, here's what the most interesting part of it to me was. Field Yates is doing, you know, the reporting on it, kind of kick things off. His early tweet about it, he says, Jerry's looking for the best situation for not just himself, but to help grow the game of lacrosse.
Oh, boy.
It's interesting. I didn't know that's questions, right? Like, what does that mean exactly? Like, is he saying, you know,
give it to us honest, but how did you take that? What did you feel inside your little stomach flurries coming across reading that sentence?
My thinking was, okay, he wants to be in a place where he can do a lot of promo to try to, you know, get a lot of, you know, maybe get some youth organizations, get some fans who aren't necessarily lacrosse fans. I'm thinking, okay, so this guy clearly wants to go all in on lacrosse. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he's going to get, you know, obviously he has some experience with the NFL and with the CFL. He has pro sports experience. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe Bernhardt and his agent want to get a bigger media presence, get lacrosse to a higher level, maybe take some of his experiences with the NFL and kind of shift them into the pro lacrosse sphere, right? You know, we've seen somebody like Rabel do it with his channel and his, you know, video recordings that kind of boost his profile and, you know, boost everyone's profile around. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe Bernhardt's looking at this like, how do I make lacrosse a career on a similar level to football, you know, and get lots of people involved. So based on that alone, I was thinking California has a huge inside track, you know, because I was like, oh, maybe he's going to go out to California, emerging youth markets, closer to, you know, video recorders, influencers or whatever. You know, I'm not thinking he's doing like a, you know, going on Hot Ones or something like that. But I did think maybe there's some sort of advantage that California would have over some of these other places. I was clearly not.
Headquarters in LA, you know, they play home games in San Diego by the
exactly. Exactly. And then Yates came back later and he said, after the signing, he said he went through the process of figuring out what was best for him and the league. And that was another thing that I kind of found interesting, right? Like, is it best for the, is there one team that it's best for the league that he plays on? Or worse for the league if he plays on? I couldn't think of, I mean, you know, you just go play and if you win, you win, you lose, you lose. I don't think it has a negative impact on the league wherever he goes, right? So I don't really know what that meant either.
Yeah, I struggled with the phrasing of some of those tweets. Cool to have Field Yates in the lax reporting realm. That certainly did rub some fans the wrong way, and understandably so, with kind of, you know, no malintent, of course. But to your point, I think reading into it, you can kind of go one of two ways. One, you can kind of, oh, yeah, what does that mean for what Jared's intentions are? But covering this guy for 4 years in college, you know, I come in a year before Jared at Maryland. He stars as that first line middie on that 2017 championship team. And just like Jake and Jesse, Jared's super reserved. You know, he lets his play do the talking for him. He's not really into the glamour and glitz and you know, and all of this being a superstar. He just wants to get back to playing. Is how I, you know, read his return. And this is without talking into the Jared yet. I can't wait till we get him. I'm sure if he balls out this weekend, which is very possible, given his athletic attributes, that we can ask him all of this post game in Charlotte. But Rosie, I think that one of the more interesting the ways that this came together was that choice of, all right, I can go, you know, forge my own path away off on another team that doesn't have one of my older brothers, Jake, and all the Maryland players on the Whips, or Jesse and all the Maryland players on the Outlaws now that I mentioned before. And I can kind of take all this money from the Redwoods and, you know, BJB one there and kind of see what I'm working with around me with this kind of exciting new performance I just watched. You know, it's funny that is the cool part of having a prize free agent like this. One, it's interesting the timing that it came, you know, after training camp. I'm sure coaches would have loved to ingratiate him into their schemes and whatnot with a week of prep, but having him, you know, I'm just picturing him watching the film and like, all right, I see the Redwoods doing some good things, man. Taking some notes, little positives here and there. And ultimately he sides with the team they beat with the Outlaws. So it was a very compelling saga to follow. and Bernhardt is just a freak athlete. Like, I think we have to emphasize this, that like that 2021 season was one for the ages. That would have, you know, they play a conference only schedule and they finish undefeated up until that title game. So it's so different from the historically great campaign that CJ Kirsch just put on. And we haven't even gotten to him yet. See when we get to talk about him with the Philadelphia Water Dogs. He's expected to miss some time with that hand injury that he suffered. They dealing with that the whole postseason run. But yeah, Rosie, I'm excited to see how this all works out. I was told Coach Udan does want to pick up Eric Law once he clears waivers. He had to make a decision, and he ended up being the odd man out. And now this is a veteran that loves playing for Denver, and Coach Udan expressed interest in wanting to bring him back. There's possibilities of, you know, AJ Pilot is on this roster. He has potential Army requirements on the horizon. We'll see if those come into effect next month. If they don't, then the other way this could go is, like, you know, he also tried to do this with Dylan Malloy. He released him upon request a couple seasons ago, and the Atlas picked him right back up. He was like, I kind of want Malloy if I can free up another roster spot, maybe later in the season, and see what happens. And, you know, he didn't have as much success with the Atlas as he did opening night with the Redwoods here, but
sure.
It just goes to show you that, you know, you add another Twerton player into this offense and you're going to have some tough decisions to make. So, seeing how they all gel together, how easily Jared's going to draw slides, and how quickly they can move to the backside and let O'Neal, let PCAV go to work. But you saw Wisnowskis and Bernhardt work together so well. That 2021 season is expect a lot of JB10 from behind the net, whether he's coming out of the box or not. And it's going to be fun to watch, man. Coming up in, of course, it's the opening game, too, for Carolina's homecoming. They come back. They play their hearts out just to parlay this into the other teams here. Just a 10-8 loss. Nothing to be ashamed about, of course. But their defense really stole the show against Atlas, and you know they fall short in the Bernhardt sweepstakes. You know, Field Yates reported that he was talking to every team at first, and I can just picture Spencer Ford and Roy Colsey like, all right, you didn't sign with us, fine, just do not sign with Denver coming up here. And lo and behold, we see Jared Bernhardt coming to the Charlotte 6 p.m. It's going to be a show. We'll put it that way. Rosie, just from the overall fit, the aspect of how much rust is or won't there be, what excites you most with the anticipated debut of Jared Bernhardt in a Denver Outlaws jersey?
They're just going to be like, listen, you know, missed training camp, just got here. You know, we'll send you some plays on the Zoom. You know, maybe you sit out on, you know, our man up stuff this week, or maybe you just pass it around, whatever. But at least 3 or 4 times, I want you to just come out of the box And if there's a shorty there, just go. You know, just see, just sprint past them, just get downhill and make some kind of madness happen. I think that's what I'm really looking forward to. Not even settled offense kind of stuff. And I think we'll see some of that, but I really just want to see him just kind of burst in some kind of, you know, unsettled situations, type throw off the defenses a little bit. I think at least at this point, that's probably where he's going to shine the most, where it's just kind of athleticism versus whoever gets stuck covering him.
Thinking about that midfield, man, like, I got excited about this even, like, at the end of last season. You know, they fall goal short in that first round game to the Whipsnakes. And, you know, you got Sam Handley still. You got Graham Bundy Jr., the sniper. You saw him get mad at himself a couple times. Shout out Graham being a guest last season. And you add Jared Bernhardt to the fold. You see how much O'Neal runs out of the box. Like, there's so much athleticism that you can kind of tinker with. And, it's just give them time. And this is a team that, you know, they probably don't care, like, where they finish, quote unquote, in the standings, as long as they get in that top six, top three in the Western Conference and make the playoffs. Like, watch out. Whoever sees Denver in that first round game, whether it's in the quarters, semis, like, you got some matchup headaches and a veteran defense, and we'll see what the goalie battle turns out to be, you know. But moving on here a little bit, Rosie, am I dumb for kind of overlooking, writing off a little bit some of these week one results in terms of, I'm not going to write them off completely, obviously, but just the way that those conditions were, very waterlogged fields, you know, rainy and windy for spurts of nearly every game. Just what did you make of the overall gameplay aspect of week one?
Well, it's a tough combination, right? When you have less than ideal weather mixed with the week one situation, right? A lot of passes kind of sailing, a lot of, you know, passes skipping out a little bit. And what part of that is rust, communication issues, guys you don't really know. You know, maybe somebody thinks it's going to cut to the left, cuts to the right. The turnovers were ugly this past week. There was a lot of ugly turnovers. But then, yeah, you also do have the kind of situations where everything's a little bit more slick as well. And so one or the other, I think you're okay. Both of those together, it's a bad combination. I don't know how much it affected any sort of, like, overall score, you know, or anything like that. Like, I don't think this team would have won, but they lost because of the bad weather.
Sure.
But I think the overall gameplay was probably affected. I would like to see Utah versus Maryland run back again on, like,
100%.
Yeah. You know, another day where everybody is healthy and they've got that all figured out. But, you know, who knows? That's part of the game, right? You don't necessarily have everybody healthy. But yeah, no, I think there's definitely some you can attribute to the less than ideal stuff we saw. But, you know, ultimately the win's what matters, right? So figure it out.
And I think it really affects, like, a team like with as slick of the sticks you see with the New York Alice, like, opening weekend last season versus this could not be, like, any more of a stark contrast, really. Like, you see them open up pretty handily against the Cannons and Whipsnakes in 2024 with bringing Shelly into the fold. Of course, they still had Dylan Malloy to come in for that game when Shelly rested for game two. They looked pretty gassed the second game, and it caught up to them in that second half, with kudos to the Cannons for coming out strong. And yeah, well, I think it Philadelphia Water Dogs were happy to have the bye week.
Yeah, no, it's a good time for it. What if I had told you before the season began that the Carolina Chaos Attack was going to outscore the New York Atlas Attack in the first game of the season?
I would have told you you were crazy, Rosie. I would have told you, just what are you talking about? Listen, this is a surprise release from Jules Henningberg. Kind of took people by surprise. He kind of, I've seen the last few seasons that he's getting less and less leverage on his matchups, but this is a group determined to bring young blood in, and there was no better fit than Jack Snyker, who every GM coach was kind of hesitant to grab due to those military service requirements. Ends up, you know, these are guys that they don't find out what their availability is going to be until really talking to their commanding officers, and you don't really find that out until you get your assignments, and that's post draft stuff. Like, Jack Snyker turns out he's going to be more available than everyone thought for the first two seasons. And you insert a guy of his stature and productivity. I think he ended up finishing a few ticks above CJ Kirst in points per game because he had that bagel in the semifinals, Kirst did. But listen, like, this is a guy you can play off ball and really thrive in a pro offense where you can just shoot the piss out of the ball. And I liked what they did rotating guys in there with, you know, they don't dress Jackson Morrill. Ross Scott is coming out of the box a bunch. Cross Ferrara is coming out of the box a bunch. They use Josh Tabata's high IQ play to kind of quarterback things. Owen Hiltz, we'll see when he debuts. Garrett Degnan really didn't get enough open looks week one. You saw they were kind of trying to hunt for that. But, and yeah, this is obviously there are going to be some growing pains. And they're going to have to rely on this defense that absolutely balled out and definitely had the advantage against Atlas week one. So they're going to have their hands full. Home games against, obviously, we touch on it with Denver. And, you know, you fall potentially 0-2 with a big Saturday night live game against the California Redwoods, also in their kind of rebuild, revamp off season. So fun way to wrap up the weekend for them, for sure. Rosie, Philadelphia, Maryland is going to be an enticing matchup. What are you looking to see out of the Philadelphia experience in their season debut here? And yeah, and then we'll kind of get into our season predictions as it kind of tails on to a question I want to ask you about your season predictions roundtable post that we got up just before opening face of the openers.
All right. Yeah, Philly, Maryland. Do we get the Matt Brandau revenge game for just kind of being a non-contributing member of that team last year? It's always interesting to see the big difference between, you know, not playing at all in week one and coming in fresh. Is there going to be a little bit of, you know, schematic rust from Philly? Any sort of game where, you know, you see, is it going to be a Sowers done matchup? It's kind of one of those that you'd circle and just kind of tell everybody to watch. The face-off situation, you know, the evolution of Bill Tierney as the head coach and leader going into this year, I'm excited to see how he's going to handle things a little bit differently. Because, you know, he kind of spoke a lot about how upset he was with himself how he ran things last year. And he said, it's real interesting, right? He was saying, you know, he listened too much to other people and whatever thought about him and what, you know, like his social media. His answer was all these things you wouldn't think Bill Tierney would say, right? You would be like, oh, you've got, you know, all these years experience, all these titles, you've done it everywhere. You think he'd just kind of show up and, you know, kick in the door and say, okay, here's how this goes. But, you know, it was the opposite last year. He was like, you know, I'm going to sit back and let everybody kind of tell me the way I should do things. And he's not playing around with that anymore. So I do want to see if that affects things differently. I want to see if they pull up for two a little bit more this year, or if, you know, Rylan Reese has to go out and get him, or, you know, some other poll has to go out and get him in transition because Tierney's not a fan of it. Maybe he's come around on that and gotten some a different insight on that sort of thing. So there's a lot to think that could be different about this Water Dogs team. And I'm excited to see what they're going to put out on the field this time around.
Yeah, Rosie, the best part about that quote was it came right after, you know, Michael Sowers is getting done finishing saying, like, yeah, you know, Coach Bill Tierney, obviously one of the winningest, if not the winning, I think second to John Inowski. He has the most titles, I believe, in Division I men's lacrosse history. And this is a guy still learning. And then Tierney comes right after that and says, you know what? I was listening too much last season. It's going to put my foot down. So some good contradiction stuff there from to the face of the franchise this season. You know, this is a team that, you know, drafted CJ Kirst first overall, has to deal with getting him fully healthy. We'll see how long that takes. And traded for Zed Williams in the offseason. He kind of tore his Achilles in that NLL season, and we'll see. They still have plenty of options on offense, really. That really wasn't the issue last year. Like, executing late and face-offs became the issue. And they made no changes to the face-off stripe. They're sticking with Staff, Alex Stathakis, so that's going to be a tough matchup with Joe Nardella. But Rosie, one of the four prompts we did for the season that really shows the contrast of our opinions of this club is who will be the two teams that missed the postseason, and who will be the champion. And I picked the Water Dogs. I think they're going to turn it around. I think they're the storybook ending of CJ Kirst, you know, coming back week 8, week 9, ready to help the postseason run. Not you. You think they missed the postseason again. And Bill Parcells' famous words, you are what you say your record is. And just thought that was a funny contrast from us in the staff roundtable.
Yeah, man. My thinking on it was definitely not, you know, an indictment against Philly's abilities or their roster, right? Because there's a ton of superstars on that roster, like Hall of Fame superstars. You know what I mean? You got Zach Currier. We've seen Michael Sowers. You know, it goes on and on, right? McArdle. It's a lot of incredibly talented guys. My thinking was more, what does everybody else in the East look like? And who do I expect is going to be worse than Philly? Like, I don't see anybody in the East who has these significant deficits in what they bring to the table. Like, I feel like Boston has continued to take some steps. Boston was really solid last year, and I really like Owen Grant coming in this year. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, between Owen Grant, however they shore up that lefty attack spot, if it is Will Manny, or if, you know, if he rides this out and keeps going like he did this week one, or
stop right there. I need your take on that. What did you think of, you know, you draft Coulter Mackesy fourth overall, and you know, they're like, sit and learn, man. This is, we got a bona fide all-time goal scorer as well, competing for the spot, and little Manny scores a hat trick after 635 days. It's his last pro game.
Well, it's just an awesome problem to have, right? Like, if you are Ryan Holman and you've gone all this time just racking your brain and kicking yourself trying to figure out what's going to happen at that lefty attack spot. Because, you know, the rest of it is set. You don't need to worry about Marcus. You don't need to worry about Asher. You just have this gap where there's just no production. And if all of a sudden you got two guys there, you know, I'm not going to feel bad for Ryan Holman. You know, he has gone on record several times just saying, you know, he didn't like how he handled last year with Will Manny. You know, he should have given him better, more opportunities, should have let him get out there more, or tried to do something else with that spot. And so, you know, for him, good for him, he's going to get another shot at that. And now he gets to try to do right by, you know, a guy who's very close to him and to his son. And so, you know, if Colter McAsee, you know, they go play some midfield, you know, or get on at limited times or whatever, that's fine. And, you know, and if Will Manny does this for a couple more weeks and then gasses out or something like that, then, you know, that's fine, too. He's gotten some great use out of him and gave him the opportunity that he wanted to. And, you know, either way, I think Holman and the Cannons are both sitting pretty at that spot. So,
yeah, no, it's interesting. It was one of the surprises of the game day lineups when they got released. Oh, no Colter. Will Manny's going to get a shot. He produces.
Yeah.
And like you said, like reading between the lines, like not even reading between the lines, like he flat out admitted it several times, like you mentioned, championship series and on, in the media availabilities that we've had with Coach Holman, that like he screwed up last season in the lefty attack spot, putting Chris Aslaney in there. You know, he gets traded along with Carter Parlett to the Chaos. Get well soon, Chris. Hope you have a speedy recovery from your injury going down. And Will Matt, like, just him. Coach Holman, like, admitting that he screwed up and continually saying, like, oh, I hope I don't mess it up this year. Like, how can I if I'm picking Princeton's all-time goal scorer? And, like, this is going to be just under scrutiny for however long this plays out here. So it'll be interesting to see, like, how it affects team chemistry, how it affects and it's only like a 2020 in hindsight thing that we can answer of if it works, he looks like a genius of like he's building depth if there's ever an injury or what have you. Like if you're building the thing and guys keep producing and you're 25 man, you can rotate them in and out. But usually you want the kind of cohesion and chemistry to build throughout the season to peak in September. So yeah, it's just really interesting situation there.
Yeah, and it's cool that we get to see. I mean, this stuff is really difficult on some of these coaches, right? You know, it's you hear these stories from these guys. It's just Tierney said it last year. He was like, the GM stuff is what keeps me awake at night, you know? So
yeah, these are tough decisions.
Yeah, it's not so much even like the coaching and the X's and O's stuff. It's like, you know, calling somebody up and telling them, you know, hey, you know, you can't come out this weekend or something like that. And so, I mean, if the Cannons keep putting up 15, 16 a week, then, you know, I think they'll get over it. You know, I don't think it's going to be that big a problem necessarily. So we'll see. But I mean, week one looked okay for them.
That it did. That it did. On top of the standings, being the home team, just some great second half displays there. Ryan Jenner cans all four of his shots in that second half. Colin Kearse makes 10 saves in that fourth quarter, 10 of his 16. Really impressive from Boston. And So all right, just going through the rest of our season predictions here. Got to give you kudos. You go with Chris Kavanaugh for the Redwoods for Rookie of the Year. You thought he'd have the opportunities in for that award, and guess what he does? He repays your faith with a 5-point display. Just absolutely great stuff. I loved your tidbit on Jeff Teat, just with let's say he puts up 65% as many points as he did last summer. Still leads the league. A little over less than half, but listen.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like a slow opening game, he still puts up 3-3 in a loss. So it's, by his standards, it was a subpar weekend. But for anyone else, it's like, oh, he's vying for a team of the week contention. So, yeah, not excited for any other takes you want to get off, any other kind of storylines you're looking ahead to for week two in Charlotte?
Quick thing. Atlas, you got to do way better with the offsides, procedural stuff like that. I was watching both of their games and just, I mean, not gonna crush them on that challenge that kind of took away the goal and kind of stuff, like, you know.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah, it sucks. It's awful. But, you know, those things happen, very quirky sort of time. But it was the offside stuff and the too many men stuff. And just, I was watching the Atlas and I was like, so what is the difference between them and the teams that win the championship, right? Because they have, you look at the roster and it's like, oh, okay, got this MVP guy. They got long stick midi of the year, short stick defensive midfielder of the year, all-time face-off guy, superstar in goal, you know, superstar defenseman, all very young guys. Like, they should have everything lined up. What is the difference between them and the archers of the world? And then I see them with 7 guys on the offense, you know, and I see them doing these things that you just can't do. So they got to clean things up a little bit if they're going to take that next step. They got the talent there, but that's like one of the biggest takeaways from week one for me was like, look, the champs do not make mistakes like that with that frequency.
Hey, week one mistakes for sure. But we're watching New York. Let's clean up the box. You'll get your runs out there, guys. Now I do want to see some more integration of that, you know, the lefty two-man game is always the question. You bring in Kyle Jackson. Don't think we saw enough of it with Teeter. Connor Schellenberger's health was kind of the main topic coming out of camp. Showed some rust in camp and certainly in some spurts of opening weekend. But Jack Posey, not an easy matchup, and nor is who is guarding him in that second game. I guess it might have been Apple on Teeter, and then what are the other cannons?
Keelty maybe on him?
Keelty, great to see him back. Great to see you back, Jack. So shout out Keelty. 2 tough matchups. You know you're gonna get those tough matchups when you're a guy of Connor Schellenberger stature. So that'll be an interesting matchup. They have a full week to 14 days to regroup and rest up after their doubleheader. So. Opening first face-off, 6 p.m. Friday night, June 6th. Watch it on ESPN Plus. Get to American Legion Memorial Stadium down in Charlotte. Shout out the Red Legion. Keep banging that drum down there, boys. And watch all the games. We'll have coverage here on InsideLacrosse.com. And thank you so much for listening. Share with a friend. And if you like what you heard, leave a comment.
That's right. Leave some comments. Share this thing. Get it going.
Thanks so much for listening, and can't wait to catch up next week.